From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of June, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzel at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible will join us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast for the United States and the rest of the Northern Hemisphere growing regions, or at least the bulk of them. Along the way today, I'll tell you about a cover crops benefit as it's related to crop insurance. It's a $5 discount per acre, and you need to sign up for it by the 15th of June. So that's next week. You want to stay with us on this edition of the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today settled $6.84 a bushel, down 14 and a half cents. December at $6.09 3/4, 6 3/4 lower. July beans at $15.08 5 cents, down 35 1/2 cents for the day. November at $14.38 3/4, down 20 3/4. Bean meal up $1.70 at $3.83.30, and the bean oil down $3.48 at $66.98. Soft bread winter wheat at $6.80 3/4, down 3 for the day. The hard red at $6.38, down 2 1/4. Live cattle futures at $1.20 2 1/2 cents, $1.47 1/2 higher. The feeders were up $2.77 1/2 per 100 pounds at $151.17 1/2, and lean hogs at $116.97 1/2 were down $1.72 1/2. Mike Zuzel at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. But before we get to that, Mike, thanks for joining us on our Commodity Week program. For those who can stay with us, they'll hear the whole of that program right here on our home station, and many of them will hear it over the weekend, or it's up online at willag.org. I really appreciate you being on that program along with Bill Biederman and Andy Wald yesterday.
Well, Todd, we're working on probably 25-plus years together, and it's just always a pleasure to be with you, and I really appreciate everything you've done for the business and my company, and obviously it's nice to be able to talk to the producers out there and help them as well. That's really the focus of everything we've ever done.
Well, let's talk about trying to help them, because they've been watching a marketplace that just seems to be all over the board, and it depends on the day as to how wide the swing is.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the point now, we're halfway into the calendar year. We've got the first summer holiday behind us. We're heading into July 4th. We've gotten the June WASDE report behind us. And so we are at that perfect time where the demand side and the supply side are going to beat each other to a bloody pulp. And when historically tight stocks are at stake and China is the number one buyer, I think we have to start thinking about the idea that policymakers and countries, especially food importers and countries that rely heavily upon food and energy for imports, are going to do just about everything they can to try and work prices lower or buy as little as possible until they literally can't wait any longer. And so this week, I think the biggest takeaway wasn't so much the USDA WASDE report. It was the fact that last week we had China come in and beat down the commodity markets. This week we had Mexico with their GMO policy on corn from the United States being talked about. And then Friday, the big hammer was the Biden administration potentially, not for sure, but three sources from Reuters are saying potentially biofuel blending may be given a pass by the refineries because of the high prices, because of the pandemic, and because of the tight grain and oilseed stocks. And this is what I think primarily led to the sharp break in the markets Friday, led by the bean oil. And I saw that the RINs, the pricing for the RINs at the Mercantile Exchange ended up going down 15% Friday morning from Thursday's close. So we're really up against a wall now where end users are that tight on supplies that and major countries are that seriously bothered by the inflationary pressures that we got to get that marketing plan in place and really start locking in some prices, I think.
The Biden administration, this would be important for both soybeans and corn because biodiesel and renewable diesel, which is a different product that has been driving or did drive soybeans higher for a while, still in a developing marketplace, so kind of speculation, I think, in that point. And then the WASDE figures, which increased by 75 million bushels, old crop ethanol usage, or by the time we get to the end of the marketing year, that's a change month over month. So I suppose it could really be an old crop function, maybe new crop, depending on how long prices stay high, as I would think, for crude oil.
Yeah, I think this is where the spreads really come into play. I think you're 100% right. There's going to be a time period here in the short-term outlook, in my opinion, that the spreads will really dictate the psychology and the sentiment of the market. And that was kind of the neat thing after the report Thursday was the corn spread went up, the bean spread went down. They really played the fundamentals from the WASDE report at face value, the South American fundamentals and those corn fundamentals you talked about as well, to take off ending stocks from last year, 150 million bushels for corn, and then add some to the beans. The spreads really were in control. And it's interesting to note the July Dease corn spread is now at the same price as the July Nov bean spread. And that's after, you know, the July Nov bean spread was able to get up to over $2.15 a bushel. It's back down to 70 cents. It's at levels not seen since late October, early November of last year. So it's really critical now the spreads come back around. Why would they do that with the weather market? Why wouldn't you put more premium in the new crop? I think it goes back to the idea that there's just no supplies out there in the corn market, except for wheat in terms of substitution. So we're going to need to ration more demand right away, I think, Todd, in the corn, especially in beans to a lesser degree, if we start talking yield problems next week, because I don't think this weather pattern is getting it done as far as holding together the crop. I think we're losing the crop as we go forward. And if we can't get any more rain than we got on Friday morning and what we get Saturday morning, what's forecast right now, I think that drought monitor next Thursday could ignite this market all over again.
It is all about weather at this point here, and I suppose still in South America, though most of that's been built into the corn crop, second crop from Brazil.
Yeah, and this is the key, I think, with the weather. The weather could play a very tough situation on us. If the weather would happen to bring about enough relief in June, we wouldn't worry as much in July. So recall that when the market breaks, like on this policy shift potential, the market breaks, it tries, it tests the technical support, and then the algo funds take over, and they're just automated funds. And so if we lose technical support on some of these key monthly charts, I think the algo funds could liquidate substantially, especially if it's led by the bean oil, because that really has been the responsible party for about 40% of the soybean rally, if you ask me.
Yeah, and so bean oil is going to need to hold, in your opinion.
That's exactly right. That's 64.23. That's an absolutely crucial level that I'm going to talk to clients about this weekend, about an important level to hold in the front end.
How much rainfall do you think we need? Generally speaking, the agronomist would say for a corn crop, 1 inch a week for June and July. So that'd be 8 inches over the 2 months.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely necessary. We're supposed to be getting a cold front coming through here Friday afternoon. It looks like there's some really heavy rains northwest of us, but then we're going to heat right back up again to 95, 96. So if that heat comes back in June, that puts more pressure on keeping the crop good in July.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzlow. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We know agricultural producers who have coverage under most crop insurance policies are eligible for a premium benefit. That's right, a premium benefit from the United States Department of Agriculture if they planted cover crops during this crop year. The Pandemic Cover Crop Program, or PCCP, offered by USDA's Risk Management Agency, RMA, helps farmers maintain their cover crop systems despite the financial challenges posed by the pandemic. Now, the PCCP is part of the USDA's Pandemic Assistance for Producers Initiative, a bundle of programs to bring financial assistance to farmers, ranchers, and producers who felt the impact of COVID-19 market disruptions. However, Brian Frieden, the director of the RMA's regional office in Springfield, Illinois, says there is a hitch in this one program. The reporting date to be eligible for the cover crops benefit part of crop insurance is a month earlier than regular acreage reporting dates.
And that date is, like you said, earlier than their normal reporting date, which is June 15th. July 15th is typically the reporting date for crop insurance and for FSA. And what this program does, it provides premium support for producers who have crop insurance and planted cover crops, either typically late summer, fall of 2020. So the premium support is $5 per acre on acres planted to a cover crop and then insured this spring.
Again, the reporting date to receive the cover crops benefit, $5 an acre, is this month, June the 15th.
The good news is they automatically receive the benefit if they file a report of acreage, the 578, with their local FSA office. So they'll just need to get an appointment. Obviously, there's still some COVID staffing limitations, but if they can call their FSA office up an appointment and get that, at least the cover crops reported, that information will make them eligible for this discount.
Again, that's form FSA-578-578. Brian Frieden says the form is fairly simple to fill out. If you'd like more information about the PCCP or the cover crop benefit, the premium discount, you can find that on our website. Again, the address there is willag.org. Look for the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast. It'll be kind of a light blue placard. Or you can visit farmers.gov and then just scroll down the page. You'll find it there as well. That's at farmers.gov. It's Friday. We always check in with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions to see what the weather forecast for the growing regions around the planet looks like to him. Hey, Eric, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Let's start not with looking forward, but back. We've had interesting weather over the past week throughout the United States.
Yeah, we have. And there's been a lot of like hit and miss storms, some big ones. I mean, right over here in Mahomet, where I live, we had a storm earlier this week where it rained about a half hour. We got 1.6 inches of rain out of that thing. So the atmosphere has been quite juicy. So the big places that had a lot of rain delivered, let's go east to west. The Mid-Atlantic through the Carolinas was very dry, and that was through April and May, and then they just got a lot of rain. In fact, there's widespread flood watches across the Mid-Atlantic today, as they're expected to get more. Probably the worst of all the flooding was in Arkansas and Mississippi, where I'm still expecting federal disaster declaration in some areas, because you add it all up in the last week, and we're talking like 15 plus inches. I mean, just for reference, people listening to this right around Champaign, that's more than a third of our annual rainfall they got in about 7 days. So the flooding is bad. It's cotton, rice. There's corn and beans down there too, but that's a lot of ag that got hit pretty hard. And then a big focal point was on the storms that moved out of the plains, the northern plains, into the western corn belt, which they did yesterday. Now, they produce a lot of severe weather. Locally, some very heavy rain in North Dakota last week. But those rains, storms, as they get farther over into the upper Midwest, like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and then into Iowa, they've kind of started to break apart and fragment a little bit. But there's still some rain coming through the state. So we just think about that, because that's an area where, you know, subsurface soil moisture is, you know, very, very low in terms of percent of where it should be, where we want it to be. So this is it. We're in that time of year where the feels as though the markets are trading weather, and storm systems like this can really cause it to go one way or the other.
So the storms that we have today, what do they look like?
Well, as it continues to move on off to these, we do have a chance for getting some scattered storms around here in our part of the Corn Belt. And then east as well, we're going to continue to see better chances. But as we just look out over the next week, we got a couple of bigger moving pieces. And in addition to a ridge, we actually have a tropical system we'll be talking about too. So get ready. This is going flat out in the summer very quickly.
What's that ridge like?
Well, the ridge is going to set up most likely between the Four Corners and Montana, and it's going to be building all weekend. So those folks in the Dakotas, they get a very brief break today in the temperatures, and then it's going to go right back up to the mid to upper 90s. And with that, you're going to get evaporation rates that are 1.5 to 2 inches a week. And so if they don't continue to get storms, some of this recent moisture is going to come right back out of the ground into the atmosphere. But what might be very interesting for us to be talking about next week is that National Hurricane Center is back to kind of investigating a weak low that could form in the Bay of Campeche. So that's between, yeah, it's like near the Yucatan Peninsula. It's the southern side of the Gulf of Mexico. And at this point, that's supposed to, according to the models, spread north and hit those very saturated fields in the lower Mississippi River Valley. But it may increase our thunderstorm threat here in Illinois on like the 16th, 17th, and 18th, next week. And so I'm going to watch that very, very carefully. But that ridge to our west is going to crank those temperatures back up, and we're going to feel like full-on summer right around here.
And how about the northwestern part of the Corn Belt?
Well, the thing when I look out longer term for the northwestern Corn Belt is, do they end up getting storms out of this pattern? They need routine storms, I mean, just now all the way through July to revive the crop. It's a pretty desperate situation. And unfortunately, every time it does storm up there, like we saw yesterday, it's come through with a lot of severe weather. So we're just going to keep an eye on things there and see if their drought situation improves. But Gulf is open. Storms can happen, but they're going to be pretty darn close to that ridge. And so it's going to get quite hot.
Hot, windy too. Those two things really cause evaporation.
Oh, yeah. Today, 30 to 50 plus mile an hour winds. And I mean, so what happened is the rain came in and now we risk drying it right back out.
What's it look like as we lead into summer?
Well, I just took a look at the net or average position of the jet stream the past 10 days, and it's firmly into Canada. Now, why I say that is because the quicker the jet stream retreats north in summer, the less wind shear we have and the more stagnant flow aloft we get. So what you end up getting is those pop-up thunderstorms, and that's your primary mode of precipitation. It seems as though we're moving into that situation quickly. Now, this doesn't mean we won't have fronts, you know, at least a little bit longer into the month of June. But if we see that jet stream get north and stay north, it means the likelihood of having those fronts and low pressure systems drops off pretty quickly. So that's conducive to a warm go of it from now clear through the middle of July and possibly beyond.
What's happening in the rest of the Northern Hemisphere that we ought to be keeping track of as, well, it's the growing season all across that part of the planet?
Yeah, let's talk about Europe and Ukraine first, then we'll jump over to China. So if we start from the west to east, Iberian Peninsula through, so that goes through Spain and into France, better rains, but they're drier in the interior. So Germany, Poland, all the way down to Italy. But then you get over toward the Black Sea. So south of the Black Sea is Turkey, north of it is Ukraine, and then to the east of it is the southern Russian wheat belt. And that's an area that we've actually seen quite a bit of precip coming up in the next 15 days. It is much drier in the central Russian wheat belt and then getting into Kazakhstan, which is another huge producer of wheat. So we just keep going east from there over to China. The main areas we're going to concern ourselves with are going to be the North China Plain and the Manchurian Plain. So the North China Plain is near Beijing, and the Manchurian Plain is north of the Korean Peninsula. So better rains near Beijing, drier north of the Korean Peninsula. But at this point, China and their weather pattern is not really giving us a strong signal away from average at this point. So we'll keep a close eye on that because, of course, China's a large producer and consumer, and we just need to see what they're going to get domestically this year.
Hey, do you mind if I give you a plug here, too?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I get the Morning Ag Report and have you talked about Muhammad and how much rain we had gotten in the past week. And all things are local, right? But I love getting the Morning Farm Report from Agrible because I can see what happened here and I can see what happened on the farm and what your prediction is for the next 7 days.
Yeah, we love doing that. It's I enjoy it every morning. I'm up at 5, try to get it out before about 7:45 and let everybody know what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about just being signed up for Agrible for that Morning Farm Report too.
Oh, sure.
Right? Because those numbers for me are important. I know that at the house here, it says I got 1.2 inches and I don't have a grain gauge up. So I'm thinking that's probably right. You said 1.6, probably where you are. Uh-huh. But I only had 0.4 in the last week over on the farm.
Yeah, it was very hit or miss. And that's what happens when you're in the summer pattern, right? And we have to rearrange our thinking to go back. Okay, wait, it's summer. All we've got is this kind of precip pattern. And It's going to be highly variable. I call it freckling. That's the way I think it looks when you look at the radar. It's all freckled.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing that comes in that morning farm report to me is my year-to-date and rainfall and compared to normals.
Yeah, and that's valuable because you can kind of see stepwise as you got precip and then know where you stand with respect to average, which means you can, you know, make decisions off that. That'll give you a clue as to, you know, what you've got in reserves and what you need coming up.
Yeah, and so we know, for instance, here we were drier earlier in the year, but we are catching up. Actually, we caught up and we're almost normal, actually about an inch above normal, I think, at least where I am. But on the farm, I'm almost 5 inches above normal, though you can go back and look, and most of that came in the end of March. Still, subsoil moisture is subsoil moisture.
Oh, I know it. That, and it's key. It is what allows us in Illinois to survive those long, dry stretches, is the fact that our soil here can't hang on to that water. So if you got it early, that's protection against what's coming later.
Thank you. And for those who have been listening and thinking, hey, where do I sign up for that? It's just agrible.com and sign up, and then you get a daily email from them. Hey, thank you to Eric for taking the time with me, and we'll talk with you again next week.
All right, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. Well, yesterday afternoon, we recorded our Commodity Week program. If you can stay with us for the rest of the hour, you'll hear all of that program. Otherwise, it's up online right now for you to listen to in its entirety at WILLAG.org. And many of these radio stations will carry the program over the weekend. Our panelists included Mike Zuzlo at GlobalCommResearch.com, along with Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net, and Andy Wald of ProducersHedge.com. I started by asking Andy to introduce himself because, well, it was the first time he's ever joined us on the program.
Yeah, Producers Hedge is a brokerage firm that I started in 2017. We're in northern Illinois, a little town of Leland, about 70 miles west of Chicago. We've got branches in Lancaster, Kentucky, Moorhead, Minnesota, Eldora, Iowa, and Oakland, Nebraska. I was in the grain business for about 15 years as a manager at an independent co-op and saw a need to get out and work with producers to help them on the grain marketing on the cash side as well as brokerage, and that was the reason we formed the business. Since then, we've added those offices, and we've got quite a nice little network across the Midwest where we can talk about the weather and different things going on.
That was Andy Wald from ProducersHedge.com. He joined us on our Commodity Week program recorded Thursday afternoon. We'll have more of that in just a moment here on Illinois Public Media.